Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Today, gardening with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. Hi, Roberta.
Hi, Mindy.
So 866-999-4626 is our number if you have gardening questions, stories, or maybe some gardening tips. We love those. 866-999-4626, our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Got a little bit of rain falling today, but we're still experiencing mild drought conditions in our region, right?
Well, we are. I mean, thankfully, we have had fair amount of wet weather, particularly over the Memorial Day weekend. What a washout
right.
that was. I had almost 4 inches over the course of 3 days, 4 days here at my house. But since then, we've had frequent episodes of showers, but the amounts only range in the hundredths to tenths of an inch. I'll take it. It's better than not. But it's still, we're running slightly on the dry side.
Yeah, although the spring blooms have, is it just because we're paying closer attention? It seems like the spring blooms have just been really gorgeous this year.
The spring blooms have been fantastic. What a year for peonies. Oh, my goodness. I have six or seven different peonies, and they all were, each one was my favorite plant. Right now, the Coosa dogwoods are fantastic this year. So yes, it's been quite lovely in terms of spring bloom in the shrub and perennial department. I also have gorgeous mountain laurels in full bloom right now. So it's a pleasure walking around the yard.
Yeah, sure is. We never know, you know, what the season's going to hold, and we could end up with some rain. We could end up with a very dry summer. So let's talk a
Absolutely.
Little bit about some, yeah, some drought tolerant ideas. And a lot of folks are thinking about, you know, their gardens now and what they want to put in there or what they want to replace if they've got sort of a high maintenance garden. What are some of your suggestions for drought tolerant perennials?
Well, I say that it's a good idea to look around at what sort of grows here naturally. I'm not 100% native plant person. I like lots of introduced non-invasive ornamentals and perennials, but I also love my native plants and plants that have grown up on Cape Cod and sort of accustomed to our local conditions tend to be a little more resilient when it comes to periods of dry weather. You know, things like black-eyed Susans, Coreopsis, you see them growing wild sometimes in waste areas. Butterfly weed, for bushes, things like ninebark, which is a lovely shrub. It's not native specifically to Cape Cod, but it is to New England. Very drought tolerant. The junipers. It's a different palette of plants than we're normally used to. I mean, many of us grew up with the visions of English perennial borders in mind, and while they are absolutely gorgeous, it sure rains a whole lot more in England than it does here.
It takes a little more work, you mentioned butterfly weed, and I think that's an underappreciated plant. That is just, it's so pretty, that bright orange, and it's, you know, you'll end up with more than you possibly could need, right, because it spreads. But it also attracts a lot of pollinators.
It's wonderful for pollinators, butterflies, certainly, but lots of the different bees, not only honeybees, but solitary bees, bumblebees, wasps often visit it. So it's a great plant. There are several of the members of that, the Asclepias family. It's not only Asclepias tuberosa, which is the bright orange one, which, by the way, also comes in yellow, but there's a swamp milkweed, which is a little less drought tolerant, as the name swamp might indicate, but that's a lovely plant to have in your yard. I'm growing now one that was new to me last year, and it's called Whoops, it's a common name, skipped my mind, but it's Asclepias verticillata, thread-leafed milkweed, and it's absolutely lovely with white flowers, and it has also seeded itself, so I'm getting a nice little colony going in this one rather dry area of my border in full sun, so that's a great one.
Yeah, I was going to say, it took me a while to get my milk, my plain old milkweed to take, and now I have to pull it up. I have one section that I let go for, you know, the monarchs and other pollinators, but it once it takes, boy, look out, right?
and it gets quite large, too, so you have to have it sort of in the middle or back of your perennial garden.
Exactly, yeah. Let's talk to Judy, who's giving us a call from Little Compton. Hi, Judy.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thanks so much. I'm enjoying the program. So I have two questions. I heard you talking about peonies earlier, and my peonies came out beautifully, but there were so many fewer blooms than normal. The plant is healthy and established, but I'm not seeing as many blooms. Does that mean I need to fertilize or something next year?
Well, if you look around the area where you're planting it, have things grown up over the years that are now casting perhaps a little more shade on the peony?
There is crowding, for sure.
Yeah. They really want absolute full sun. I had a gorgeous one a number of years ago, and the surrounding plants all grew up, and it ended up in total shade. So I moved that this year. So maybe if you trim back some of the plants that are casting shade on it, if you want to fertilize it, something like Plant Tone would be wonderful, or a 5-10-10 type of product. But it really does want absolute full sun.
What was your second question, Judy?
Yeah, there's some. The second question I have, I planted three American redbuds last year, and one of them that's in the sunniest and maybe the most exposed position with the wind has become very top heavy, almost bent with the rain yesterday, almost bent all the way to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
The diameter of the tree is about, you know, it's an inch and a half or so, but it's about 10 feet tall.
Yep.
Any thoughts or suggestions on what I should do? I ended up just pegging it to some poles that I found.
The regular straight species redbud, or is it a cultivar?
I'm afraid I can't answer that question.
That's okay. It may be, did it put out a lot of rapid growth?
They came in beautifully this year with, you know, and the leaves are beautiful and big. So
yeah,
it is top heavy.
It's possible
sure.
It just, you know, the wood, it's sort of growth. It's grown fast, so it's the wood itself is not really as strong. I find red buds sometimes tend to be a little weak wooded, and they can bend like that. You could stake it temporarily until it gets a little more mature, but it should be fine.
Super.
Judy, thanks
Good.
For the call.
Thank you so much.
Yep. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626, our email address of the point at capeandislands.org. Carol sent a note. She says, I have a mountain laurel happily spending its third summer in front of my house, blooming like mad. However, its new foliage has shot out far above the blooms, making the plant look as though its shirt is half on and hair uncombed. Is this an unstoppable habit? How should I prune it to tidy it up a bit without making it feel unloved?
That's an interesting one. It sounds like there have been good growing conditions, and it's pushed out a lot of new growth, which have sort of eclipsed the blooms. You could trim it back, but you don't want to remove all the new growth because that's what's going to bear the blossoms next year. But you could prune it back above a set of leaves, which is where the buds are, and enjoy it for the oddball plant that it is.
Anne in Eastham says, I know that now that the azaleas have bloomed, it's time to prune. Usually I do it delicately, taking the calyx off, but they keep growing all season. Is it advisable to use a hedge trimmer to give them a 4-inch shave?
I don't use hedge trimmers because you end up with either cubes or meatballs, and you lose the natural symmetry of the plant. But you certainly can use hand clippers. It's a little more work, and you can prune it a little more heavily than you normally do, making sure that when you do prune, you prune above either a set of leaves or a node on the stem. And a node is, you generally, there's a line demarking where former leaves were growing further down the stem, mm-hmm. And that will be where the latent buds are. So you can do a heavier than normal pruning, but I wouldn't use shears.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you a question, Roberta. I'm hoping I gave the right advice to a friend. I had some rhododendrons that I'm getting rid of, and they're maybe between four and five feet tall. And I told him that he could cut them back, cut them pretty back severely to dig them up. That's right. I mean, they could be like 3 feet or something, right?
And they'll
be okay. Yeah. Oh, good. And they're pretty shallow rooted. So hopefully with a lot of water,
they will survive.
He'll have some success. Yeah. You know,
I recall at one point at Heritage Plantation, they had a whole row of Dexters along the walkway at the entrance going into Heritage Plantation. And one year they cut them all to the ground.
Wow.
They weren't moving them, but they had gotten too big for where they were. And they've all come back. They look lovely.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we've heard a lot about these Brudex cicadas, which are not in our area, but
correct.
We've seen a couple. Is that right? We have the brood 15 that's coming back in 2025.
Yeah, we're brood 14. And 14. If you lived here in 1991, oh, my goodness, what a chorus all over the Cape. It was pretty amazing. And they came back in 2008, but not quite as large or as noisy an emergence, unless you lived in the middle of that area. So they're not due until 2025. But I've been working in the yard a couple of weeks ago, and I hear this noise in the distance, and I'm going, that's a cicada. And it's not the dog day cicada. That comes out late July, early August, dog days of summer. And it has a very specific buzz. This also had the typical periodical cicada call. I'm going, no, I must be imagining it. But I kept hearing it over the course of several days, and then it got louder, and I heard it in another direction. And I live in the Catuit Marston's Mills area north of 28. And then a friend posted a picture of a cicada on her screen door, and I saw in the Cape Cod Gardening Group another picture, and it's definitely a periodical cicada. Now, I contacted my friend, former Plymouth County agent Deborah Swanson, sent her some pictures, and she sent them to an entomologist who just retired from the university. And he, while he wasn't able to identify them specifically as to brood, he said there were actually sort of two schools of thought on this, and without getting really technical, it's possible some brood X, brood 10, have hitchhiked up here in the past and are establishing a new region. That's one possibility. The other is there's a phenomenon in insects when they're underground. They go through what's called a diapause. It's sort of like hibernation, but it's not. And there is a phenomena where diapause can be interrupted on a four-year basis, and sometimes they will emerge early. And he was sort of leaning towards that theory rather than it being brood 10. But I just found it fascinating that I could hear, because I'm kind of geeky that way, that I could hear cicadas when they weren't supposed to be here.
But, you know, when we have the big numbers of them, doesn't it sound like the soundtrack of every old scary movie that you've watched? I mean, that sound, it's like I don't know, it seems like they used them in the 1950s and 60s. Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking with horticulturist Roberta Clark, 866-999-4626 for your garden questions, stories, tips. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. David is giving us a call from Hyannis. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Okay, I've got a question for Roberta. And this has to do with garlic.
Yes.
And that, I'm in one of the community gardens here on the Cape in Marston's Mills, and one of the gardeners pointed out to me a couple of days ago something on our garlic plants, and they're covered in this, what I've subsequently researched and found to be garlic rust. A lot of us in that community garden are growing garlic as well, and I'm wondering what are the chances for this spreading so that it gets to pretty much everybody's garlic patch. I mean, harvest of garlic is only about 3 weeks away, so I'm not
correct
terribly concerned about this year's crop, but I'm wondering, you know, if this stuff gets around and spores travel all over with the wind, how do we combat this stuff?
Well, that's very interesting. I have to confess, I have never seen garlic rust in my life, and I've grown garlic for years. You could try and use one of the organic fungicides, Serenade, if you can find it, although it's hard to come by these days. Potassium bicarbonate is an excellent organic fungicide that can be used, and that would at least protect the growth from becoming infected. Other than that, I would just keep a close eye on it. Mine are just starting to produce their scapes, and it's a fabulous crop this year. My goodness, they're like 3 feet tall, and they look wonderful.
Right.
And when the and maybe this is something all the folks at the garden, that's a great garden, by the way. I had a plot there for years. What the gardeners can do when they do harvest their garlic is make sure that instead of putting the foliage in the large compost area at the garden,
right,
that they bag it and send
right
it to the landfill.
Yeah, as with yourself, I've grown garlic for years and never had a single pest or anything that impacted it. But
yeah, me neither.
This clearly, this person's patch, I mean, it was just suffused throughout completely.
Wow.
Every single stalk was covered in that stuff.
If they're willing to do it, they might pull their crop and harvest early and get it out of there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's what I suggested. I said it's probably still digestible. I mean, it's still edible, but
yeah,
you certainly
maybe
don't
a little
want to
smaller
save these for planting
yeah
next
yeah
year.
David.
Yeah.
Yeah, David, thanks for the call. It's an interesting question. Let's talk
to
Lou.
I'm going to have to research that after the
yeah
show and see yeah what I can find out about it, because that's a new one for me.
Okay, let's talk to Lou, calling from Hyannisport. Hi, Lou.
Hi. Mindy, hi, Roberta.
Good morning.
I have a Henry Lauder's walking stick, which is
great plant,
way out of control. Can I limit up so that you can see some of the structure of the branches? I don't
yes
know.
You
it's
can
so crazy.
Yes, you can. The thing you also want to look for, many of these are grafted. And I have a purple-leafed hazel. It's not Harry Lauder's, but it's got the contorted stems
right
as well. And it frequently, every year, I have to go in there and prune out suckers that are growing from the bottom that are shooting straight
mm-hmm
up, and they would overcome the entire plant if I did nothing. So look for those and definitely take all of those out. And, yes, you can remove the lower limbs to reveal the beautiful features of the trunk. It's not going to harm it at all.
Okay. I just don't, I mean, at one of the gardens I take care of, and I'm going, I have no idea how to look after this thing.
Yeah. What you don't want to do is try to just randomly, you know, turn it into a square or a cube or, you know.
No.
Allow it to grow in its beautiful, natural, contorted form. It's really quite a unique plant.
It is really a neat plant. It's just very crazed right now, so I'm going to have to get after that. All right. I appreciate your help. Thank you.
Thanks.
You're
welcome.
Thanks
for the call. Sharon is giving us a call from Mashpee. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. Yeah.
Hi.
I have a little border with some cranesbill geraniums.
Yes.
And I've had geraniums before, but these just have simple little flowers on them, and all the flowers are gone now. And there are all these little pods, seed pods. And I'm just wondering, do you think it will bloom again, or should I cut those off? Or I just, you know.
Well, they only have one blooming period. Most perennials have a period of bloom, and some last longer than others. But in general, it's about 2 weeks. If you find that unsightly, you can prune those off. I don't mind them, so I leave them. I kind of find the seed pods a little interesting. And there's always the possibility that, you know, they will give you some volunteers. So I would probably leave them.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's great then, because they are kind of a little unsightly. But I would rather leave them, and maybe I'll get some others, you know, growing in there.
There you go.
Sharon, thank you for the phone call.
Thank you.
Yeah, 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626, our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Mary writes, my young sassafras has developed a problem in the branch tips, many holes and brown shriveled edges on one side of the leaves. She did send a photo. I sent you away, but I don't know if you're your computer, Roberta. So she says, any suggestions?
Let's see if I can get on, get the cat off my lap, maybe get onto my computer.
Well, while you're doing that and looking that up, I've got another question for you. This is from Kristen in West Barnstable, who says, love the program. I look forward to it every month. I have a beautiful Gaura plant. It stands about 3.5 feet high. With the wind over Memorial Day weekend, the plant got knocked down flat to the ground, and it won't seem to stand upright again, despite me trying to nudge it up. Any tips?
Oh, that's a tough one. Gaura has kind of... doesn't have the strongest stems in the world, and so when we have heavy rain or heavy wind, it does tend to get a little beat up. I might get, you know, you can get them at garden centers, you can get them at places like Job Lot or one of the rings, support rings, and carefully fit it around the plant, and you insert the legs into the ground, and it will just give it some support so it can remain in an upright position.
Right. And then Cindy says, I would like to propagate one of my rhododendrons, Pink Gloria, Dexter Rhodey. How and when do you cut the new growth to accomplish this?
Rhododendron cuttings are taken when the new growth is in what they call a semi-hardwood state. It's not... When it first comes out, it's very soft and tender. As it matures, it gets firmer and firmer. It's sort of, it's not completely mature, but it's a firmer than a new, brand new shoot. I'd have to go out and look at mine and see if they're at that point yet. Maybe not quite. And when it reaches that stage, you can take cuttings. Usually they're about 4 to 6 inches long. The leaves are mostly removed except for the top ones, and sometimes they're simply cut in half. And you use some rooting compound, either powder or gel. Dip the cut end in that, and then pot it in some. You could do it in peat. You could do it in, some people use vermiculite. I generally don't use regular soil. And put them in a shaded area and make sure they don't dry out. And they should root fairly readily, maybe 4 to 6 weeks.
And were you able to see Mary's picture of her sassafras?
I'm looking at it now, and it looks It's very hard to say. Clearly, there's been something eating it, and it almost looks as though something has also webbed those leaves together, which is why they're kind of turning brown. Something might be on the inside feeding. I'm a little baffled by it. She might give Russ Norton, the current extension agent, a call, and he might direct her to send samples to him that, so he can take a look at it and make a diagnosis.
Yeah, it's good if you can actually see the leaves. So, yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
All right. I got a question for you about lupines. They're so beautiful, and I've had them, and I, for some reason, cannot seem to get them to come back. My neighbor has these beautiful lupines. Am I just spending too much time in them? Do they just need to be, you know, not disturbed, just left alone? How do you get them to come back?
Well, I'd love to know, because I've never been able to do it either.
I'm going to have to ask my neighbor,
I see people
right?
growing these absolutely gorgeous lupines.
Gorgeous,
and mine have never, I mean, the year I plant them, they look great, and then I never see them again.
Right.
So they want full sun, a good soil, but also one that is well-drained. And I'm not sure what the secret is, to be perfectly honest.
All right. Well, maybe somebody else knows the secret, and they can call us and tell us. 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626, or our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. I was looking at some news reports from Maine talking about this brown-tail moth caterpillar, and it's only in Maine and Cape Cod. Yeah, and causing painful rashes. And I had not heard of this before. So when I saw Maine and Cape Cod, I thought, oh, that's something we have here. And I've never really noticed it. But I guess we need to be a little bit careful, because it's sort of like a poison ivy kind of
rash.
Well,
it's a very, very interesting caterpillar. And it's only located in two areas on the Cape, Sandy Neck, out in the dune areas, and in a section of Truro. You don't really find it anywhere else on the Cape, which I think is kind of interesting. I'm not sure why that is, what the conditions are that have limited it to those areas. But we do get reports, we did get reports when I was still working, you know, of people hiking in Sandy Neck or hiking down in the Truro area. I think it's the Truro Highland area, I'm not sure. You know, and then reporting, you know, a day or two or more later, you know, having very itchy rash, because the hairs are what we call urticating hairs, meaning that they irritate the skin and will cause a rash in sensitive people. Some people are very sensitive to gypsy moth hairs, which can do that as well. Not with everybody, but certain people are very sensitive to it. So it's kind of it's actually an endangered species on the Cape, as far as I know, because it is limited to those very small populations in only two locations.
I guess Maine, they've got in 16 counties, so Maine's got a bigger problem than we do.
I saw that article. They're having a big outbreak this year. It was interesting.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's talk to Bonnie, who's giving us a call from Wellfleet. Hi, Bonnie.
Yes, hi. Hello.
Hi.
I have a question. I have a question about my brown turkey fig tree. Which is a tree we inherited. So it's probably was planted around 2003.
Yep.
And I have two questions. One is that the leaves are curling and it's not lack of water. And the second question is that we cannot figure out how to prune it. We have
now, is it growing in the ground or is it in a pot?
Oh, no. This is in the ground.
In the ground.
Yeah,
okay.
This is huge. So right now it's probably, we'd need a very high ladder to get to the figs on the top of the tree.
Yeah.
And it's got many, many branches. It's been cut back severely a lot. And last year we just let it go and didn't prune it at all. and now all the figs are
up at the top.
Are out of reach, but when we cut it way back, we hardly get any figs.
Yes, until the following year. I remember Jenny Junker, who works at WCAI, had a huge brown turkey, and it was next to her house, and she picked the figs from the second-story window. It's kind of a conundrum. They do when they're happy, and it clearly sounds as though it's happy in Wellfleet. They will put out a lot of growth. Is it in a protected area, so it's not really subject to really absolutely horrible freezing temperatures in winter?
Well, it's right behind a sunroom, which gets very hot in the winter.
Okay, so
but
it may get some radiated
protected.
Heat.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can cut it back after harvest, and it should put out new growth that hopefully will bear figs the following year.
So after harvest, meaning in early November?
Your figs, when are your figs ready? They're not ready till November?
Well, no, that we harvest them up through Columbus Day.
Yeah, you might sacrifice some of the late harvest and prune it back in August.
Really?
Yeah. That would give the new growth time to harden off before winter arrives.
Before it gets too cold, yeah.
If you prune it as late as November, it's not going to put out new growth until the following year, and you may not get a lot of figs on that.
Yeah.
Or you might just harvest using a ladder.
yes, right.
Because it sounds like
and
it's
what about
very
the,
happy.
The leaves curling?
That I'm not sure what it could be. There may be some mites on it. It's a possibility. You might just, if you have... a jeweler's loop or magnifying glass, take a look at the underside of the leaves and see if you see very tiny little specks or that scurry around. You won't necessarily see webbing, but it possibly could be mites, which can be a problem in dry weather, which we haven't had for the past couple of weeks, but up until that past couple of weeks, it has been dry.
Yeah. All right, Bonnie, thank you for the phone call. And Roberta, Jenny says her tree is doing well, so good
Excellent.
News. We had some a time there where we thought she might lose that tree, but it turns out it's
I remember
doing okay.
That.
Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking with horticulturist Roberta Clark. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Got a couple of interesting email questions here. Catherine says, I put my dahlias that I grew from seed into the garden bed. They were immediately eaten into partial skeletons. I dusted them with diatomaceous earth, which seemed to slow down the damage. How long should I continue dusting them, or should I switch to Captain Jack? The dust is not visually appealing.
You could switch to Captain Jack's now if you'd like. I suspect the culprit is either earwigs, and if you go out there at 10 o'clock at night with a flashlight, you will definitely see them. The other culprit possibility is the Asian garden beetle, which is a small sort of chestnutty brown beetle that feeds at night on foliage. But I suspect I'm leaning towards earwigs. They are a real problem in the garden that a lot of people don't ever consider them a problem, but they are.
Yeah. You know, I knock on wood here. My dahlias are looking fabulous. So
wonderful.
Yeah, and usually I do get some of that, you know, skeleton shell leaves in the beginning. But right now they're all looking fantastic and growing well, so I'm keeping my fingers crossed about that. All right, Peter from Yarmouth, when is the best month to transplant rhubarb? I have some growing under a fence that needs to be transplanted. What advice would you have for transplanting rhubarb? Also, what is the difference in green stem and red stem rhubarb? A neighbor gave me some green stem rhubarb.
there's really no difference except color. There's no difference in growth habit. There's no real difference in flavor. And if you were going to transplant it, I would either do it in early spring, April is great, or I would do it in late August, early September. And that gives it time to become established before winter sets in. September is a great time for a lot of transplanting, both perennials and other things, because the ground is warm. Usually we have a fairly normal rainy period. We did not last year. We were dry from June until the almost mid-November last year. But if you transplant in early September, it's just an excellent time. The plants establish well at that point.
All right. Pam says, can you ask Roberta to address bugs? I live in Sconset on Nantucket, and I'm very concerned about the lack of them. Not so long ago, I could sit and watch the bees in my catmint while sipping my coffee. I let my privet bloom to invite bees. I had to be careful walking barefoot for all the bees and the clover on my lawn. I know there is concern for bees all over, but I have no June bugs, no moths, no beetles. We never had mosquitoes out here. I see more and more pest control trucks and people spraying. Is Roberta also concerned? Does she have an opinion about all this spraying?
Well, I have seen a lot of people say on the Cape Cod Gardening Group that they're not seeing bees this year. And then we have other people who say, well, I have lots of bees. So it's sort of a conundrum. Generally, if you have lots of blooming plants, a wide variety that bloom at different times over the course of the season, you will have pollinators. Many pest companies have switched to more environmentally friendly materials that have less impact on what we call non-target species. But may still impact them. There was an interesting discussion on Facebook the other day. Someone had asked about using cedar oil. A company was going to be using cedar oil, which is a natural product against mosquitoes. And the comment that a very thoughtful person put up was that, yes, it is sort of a natural product. It works by degrading the exoskeleton, the outer shell of the insect. Well, if you're spraying for mosquitoes with cedar oil and it's degrading their exoskeleton, and if it gets on bees, it will also degrade their exoskeleton. So I think people need to, if they have, I generally don't like whole yard treatments. If there is a specific problem on a specific plant, you can apply a material at the appropriate time to just the problem. You don't need to be spraying everything in a yard if your problem is on one plant. You know, if you're concerned about ticks. A lot of people want to have their yard sprayed for ticks. Generally, my approach to ticks, because I work in my yard in wooded areas frequently, I use a product that contains permethrin, and I spray my shoes and my jeans from the knee down. And it will not only repel, but it will also kill any ticks that get on my shoes or my pants. So I'm protecting myself without spraying my yard. So I think people really need to think carefully about what they're using, or they certainly need to inquire if they're having a professional company come in. They need to inquire what the company is using and how they are going to be applying it. I'm all for minimizing use of pesticides in both natural and synthetic in our yards. I mean, I love spinosad, which is in Cap'n Jack's, but if a bee flies through it while it's wet, it will affect the bee. So I try to apply it at a time when bees are not active, late in the day, and to parts of a plant that are not going to be attracting bees or pollinators. So foliage never blossoms. So people just need to be, you know, employ some critical thinking about how they're going to be using stuff and why. Because we do want to protect our pollinators.
Yeah, and I do think Pam brings up a good point. We are seeing fewer. There's no question about it. I think of all the numbers of butterflies and different bees and hornets and wasps that I used to have in my garden, and I still have some, obviously, but not in the numbers that I used to have them. So, so definitely there's something going on.
There is, and you know, not to open a whole other can of worms, but we also have to consider that over the past 20 years, I've seen a definite change in how our seasons are, hotter and drier in spring. You know, so it's possible there may be some issues with climate change. I don't know. I'm not a climate scientist, but I do observe things.
We have a note from Ellen who says her question is about foxgloves. I planted two last spring. This year, one purple bloomed beautifully. The second white one planted away from the purple looks like it was rotten. Much of the white is brown and the spikes did not flower to the top. Looking closely, the stems have collapsed. It looks like a piece of celery rather than a round stem. One stem is round and has flowered properly. Should I remove the whole plant?
I would probably just remove the affected stems and leave the ones that still look decent and allow it to form seeds that will drop and come up, form plants that will bloom next year. I've seen a number of plants this year that have a sort of a crown rot at the base of the stem. I'm not sure what's causing it. It's possible that's what this is. Without seeing it, I'm only guessing. But certainly prune out the damaged stems.
I'm wondering about your favorite climbers. I'm thinking of, there's some annual climbers that I love, like the hyacinth bean, scarlet runner bean, and one that I really sort of accidentally found a few years ago, the firecracker vine, which is a Minilobata, I guess it's called. I think it's in the morning glory family, but
yes,
those are all three just really fun, kind of different looking climbers. And I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts on other climbers that I'm not considering.
Well, my favorite is trailing nasturtium.
Oh.
Yeah, you can't find it at a garden center. What they have at the garden center, I love nasturtiums, but they are the bushy nasturtiums.
Right.
They're not the trailing nasturtium. So I grow mine from seed, I love them. I put them in hanging baskets, and they grow down and look absolutely wonderful. I put them in the garden, and they creep along the ground. If I'm lucky, they'll drop seeds that will come up next year without my even having to plant them.
Right.
So the trailing nasturtium is one of my favorite. And you can use the wonderful blossoms in salads. They're nice peppery flavor.
So do you order those online or something? Is that where you get the seeds?
I did. Well, I found a package of trailing nasturtiums, just sort of mixed colors, at a garden center. But I ordered. There's a wonderful company that sort of specializes in antique varieties of flowers called Select Seeds. And I ordered Indian Cress, and that is a long, trailing, bright orange nasturtium.
Oh, I'm going to have to look into that for next year. I have cool. a lot of nasturtium, the regular nasturtium, so I have to wait until next year.
Yep, me too.
Yeah. You know, we a couple of years ago, as you might remember, I pulled up all my vegetable beds and kind of redid some smaller ones, and I really missed my strawberry patch. So this year, I planted a new strawberry patch in a smaller bed. I planted it in March. Wasn't sure like what I would really get, but boy, has that thing done great! I'm amazed at just how healthy it looks, and the number. I wasn't expecting to really get very many berries since it's a brand new bed, but quite a few berries.
Excellent,
and still blooming. Yeah.
Yes, I pulled up my strawberry patch a few years ago because I needed the room for something else. But this year I decided I missed them, And I just picked up a couple of 3-packs of Everbearers at the garden center, and I've got them in pots on my deck, and they're so pretty in bloom, and they're forming berries, and I had 2 that were just about ready to be picked, and by golly, something, I suspect Mr. Chippy got up on the deck and ate them. So disappointing.
I expected to have more of mine eaten, but I guess they haven't figured out they're there yet, because it's a new bed.
Knock on wood.
Yeah. A lot of people this time of year ask about hydrangeas, and so it's always good maybe to remind people that the blue hydrangeas, you don't want to prune them now.
No, absolutely not. And I think we're going to have an excellent year for blossoms.
It's about time, huh?
Mine have all budded up, the ones that survived the drought in the winter. I had a couple that did not. The one, my favorite, of course, is one called Tough Stuff. There is absolutely nothing that sets it back. It's a beautiful lace cap, and it is absolutely loaded with buds this year. My Blue Billows is loaded with buds. I think it's just going to be a lovely, lovely hydrangea year. But no, if you prune now, you're pruning off your potential flowers. So if you have to prune hydrangea, the time to do it is about 2 weeks after they have come into bloom. They still look good. The blossoms might be just starting to fade, and you can prune them back above a set of leaves, above a set of buds at that point, and they'll put out new growth that will set bud and flower next year.
Great. All right, let's talk to Sue, who's giving us a call from Hyannis. Hi, Sue.
Hi. Hi, Roberta. Hi, Mindy. Hi. How are you?
Good.
Good.
I inherited a tree peony in our house when we moved 5 years ago. And it was always beautiful. But this year, it just, and I think they're known to be, they live for like
100
generations,
years.
Right? Yeah. Hundreds of years. So I'm very nervous that this year it's just not looking good. It's all of the, much of it has died back, and only a little bit greened up this year. And there are a few blossoms. And I'm just wondering, what should I do?
Is it in full sun?
Maybe not, actually. We have a beech tree nearby that might be shading it out a bit.
Yeah, I find, you know, sometimes when plants you don't bloom as profusely as you're used to, or start looking a little bit weaker, and they really like a lot of sun, sometimes I like to look around and see, what have the surrounding plants done? Have they grown to the point where they're now casting shade on this plant? So if that's the case, you could do some selective pruning to allow more light to reach it, and maybe give it a little bit of plant tone to encourage it to put out some new growth. And hopefully next year it will look beautiful for you.
Okay, will do. It just needs a little TLC.
Little TLC, exactly.
Yep. Thanks for the call, Sue. Got about a minute and a half left. We didn't really talk much about the vegetable garden. Anything we need to be thinking of in the vegetable garden?
Well, you know, it's never too late to plant. I'm sort of behind this year for a variety of different reasons. I mean, I got my tomatoes in mid-May. Yep. I was actually early there, and I actually have a couple of green tomatoes on some of the plants, and they're looking fabulous. But, I haven't planted my green beans yet.
I planted yellow beans.
If you're running behind in the vegetable garden, it's only June 15th or 14th? You have plenty of time. You can plant beets and carrots and lettuce and heat tolerant lettuce, perhaps. Something like slow bolt or romaine. Anything that, has a harvest window of 60 to 70 days, you've got plenty of time to plant. Back when I was doing the demonstration garden, I'd get 3 crops of beets over the course of the season, and two crops of beans. So, you know, don't be afraid to go out there. And if you don't see them at garden centers, the six-pack season for things like lettuce, et cetera, are past at most garden centers. Pick up a packet of seed. I love to grow seed.
All right, horticulturist Roberta Clark joins us the third Tuesday of every month. Thank you, Roberta. We'll talk to you
next month.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thank you for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.